Welcome to the FinTech Scaly Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Lina, COO at Candice. Prior to joining Candice, Lina had really great experience and great insights into both operational sales and sales roles across various organizations. So we're really excited to have him on the show today, talk through Lina's scaling philosophy and also what they're doing right now. So Lina, great to have you. How's everything going today?
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me. I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Why don't we kick off the show? What I normally like to do is, you know, give the audience and our listeners a bit of a background to you prior to, you know, working at Lina. So maybe jump into the time machine. And if you could let us know what attracted you to sort of the startup and scale-up scene, why did you decide to jump in that direction?
It was really random. At university, we had to do mandatory internships as part of the studies. And I did, we had to do two. And I did my first one at like a real company. So, you know, it was a production plant for bed sheets. And I really disliked it. And so for the second internship, or as I was looking for the second one, there was an email that was distributed across university that basically said something about, I don't have anything yet, but an idea. You need to bring your own laptop. It's going to be tough and you're not getting paid, but you know, you have a chance to start a company. And I was like, okay, that sounds tempting. So that was like the very first experience, I guess, I had with the startup scene. And I liked it. So then out of university, I Rocket Internet, which is a big German company builder. They had just started to launch Foodora, which is a food delivery service. And they were just opening up Hamburg, the town where I was studying. So that seemed like a great opportunity to get started as like a first job out of university. And then from there, well, I was in it.
And yeah, what did you learn in that experience? I mean, what type of things did you get involved in? And what were the key lessons learned during that phase?
Very early, especially at Foodora, it was a lot of, I guess, everybody had way too much responsibility. So we were a team of, say, young, not very experienced people in the cities, but we all really cared about, you know, the company had a lot of energy and put everything that we could into it. And then slowly the company, you know, became more senior and they hired more people who had done this before. So slowly, you know, it was not just trying out stuff and, you know, learning from that, but it was also actually people there who could help you. So it's like it's a constant being in a little bit over your head. And through that, you learn limits and you learn very fast, because you're not in a protected environment, right? Because for me, the greatest thing about startups is that you can actually screw up fast, yeah, and then move on to the next thing. They allow that space for it.
Yeah, and tell me more about that, you know, failure. I mean, and not doing it right the first time. How did that, you know, how did that evolve and how did that actually build your toolkit? So when you jumped into Candice, there was, you know, a bit of ammunition in the gun to go out and make a hit.
Yeah. So how has that evolved? I mean, at the start, Candice, when I joined, we were like four people, right? So now the scale of everything is a lot bigger. So, you know, when you say like, when you actually really screw up, it now matters a lot more than, you know, at the very start. Yeah. So it's a little bit different today than it was, you know, 5 years ago. So overall, I think the key thing or the key problem is always, do you pivot or persist? So one of our values is actually a persistence, but the problem is that this can also go very wrong. So either you start doing something and just because it, you know, the first attempts don't work, you then say, okay, we have to do something else. So you change course. So you never really follow through with anything. That's the one side. The other side is that you do something too long because you really believe in it, even though, you know, all the facts point you that you actually shouldn't do this. So one of the key things for us was building a system or a framework that allows us to experiment and, you know, stay with something, even if the first attempts don't work, but then have something like a rule that says to protect ourselves from our own persistence and optimism, to define the point where we say, okay, this doesn't work, let's do something else. Yeah, to somehow kind of like have that space for, you know, this might not work or you might commit a mistake, but like have a get out option or a limit by which you sell the stock, so to speak.
And I mean, let's dive into that. I mean, building a system and a framework, are you talking about a technology system or is it more a process internally where you can try things out, and if they fail, they fail. And if they, you know, sort of pass the rule, as you just mentioned, then you continue forward. Is that, yeah, which one is it?
Yeah, so it's really rather a process and a way of philosophy even of working.
Yeah.
So at the very start, by now, the whole company works in some kind of a scrum system. So we all do sprints weekly or bi-weekly. We use a lot of agile elements, so like retrospectives, sprint commitments, and that sort of stuff. And what we use a lot in marketing, for example, is we call it experimentation framework, but it's actually very simple, where we basically say, before we start an experiment, we form a hypothesis of what we want to learn at this experiment, because you can A/B test yourself to death. Yeah, so it's make the button blue or red, and then there are a lot of other colors you could try out. Mm. So what we are trying to do is we formulate a hypothesis that we want to prove or disprove, and then we have a framework where this experiment goes through that has four iterations. Mm. And after the fourth one, we give up. But we, you know, if at the first iteration, we figure out, hey, this is great, works, you know, works a lot better, then great. Mm. We learn something. But we will not stop experimenting on something unless we have gone through four iterations that get like more and more extreme every time. So at the first iteration, you might just change some small detail of your original draft, you know, and then as you go through the iterations, you become more and more adventurous, let's say. And that, you know, so like working in, you know, in sprints, in Scrum, a plus for certain teams having this experimentation framework has really helped us become better.
And I get that. I mean, that's crucial to success, really, to try and test. And then obviously, if it works, you go. But, you know, as you move from Dora to then Candace, is part of the reason that you joined Candace, was it to have the autonomy to put in these type of systems and then see them work? I mean, what attracted you, I guess, what attracted you to the Candace opportunity?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really enjoyed working at Foodora. It was a great company, but it grew extremely quickly. Mm. So, I mean, in the B2C world, that was really like exponential growth. So I had moved from the Hamburg office to the Berlin office, to the headquarters, which was still great. But one of the Candace founders was actually the person that also wrote that email at university, you know, which brought me into this whole like scene in the first place. So I knew him. I knew very little about, well, the space Candace operates in, which is, I guess, you know, accounting, financial processes. But I knew one thing, and that is that everybody I had any interactions with really like hated accounting, or, you know, when they had to fill in, you know, their expense reports, when they had to provide missing invoices, they really, really disliked them. There was a very strong negative emotion associated to the topic. And so I felt like, okay, seems to be a big problem that potentially every company on earth has, because by law, every company has to do accounting. So, I mean, yes, I was looking forward to be in to start from scratch, because Foodora, when I joined, they had access to an excess of capital already because they were backed by Rocket Internet. So it was like almost an artificial growth, right? So Candice was the chance to start from scratch and really put the work in. And I knew one of the founders and one of the early employees already and trusted them. And the third thing was, okay, this seemed like a very, very big opportunity in terms of market. And it's an actual problem that companies have. So those were kind of the things that made me want to join Candice, even though I was happy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned you sort of gave a bit of an overview around Candice, but what specifically does the tech do? What problem are you guys sort of solving in that sort of accounting space?
Yeah, so, I mean, we started off very different. We wanted to, you know, the first draft and prototypes of the product were like completely different to what we have now. Like the problem we're trying to solve is that many teams work with great software already, right? Like especially like the SaaS product offering has like improved so much and it's so fun. And like the software really helps everybody like work better, right? Collaborate better with each other, make better decisions. You know, you have access to so much data that is, you know, there in like beautiful dashboards on your phone, on your computer, right? So software, in my opinion, really improves everybody's working life. But then when it comes to accounting, it's like a time machine, at least here in Germany. So we call this like the disaster triangle. And suddenly you're back to Excel sheets. You know, you have many emails, you have paper folders. We even use stamps in Germany. Yeah. So, and it's so much, this results in so much friction because financial processes involve everybody in the company. Yeah. So everybody orders stuff or has suppliers. And so they generate invoices, they receive invoices, they need to approve invoices, they need invoices to be paid. And they always, you know, let's say a marketing manager, they use all of this great software like HubSpot or, you know, they use Zapier to, you know, get data from A to B and have this amazing experience. But then when it comes to financial processes, you know, there's this huge amount of friction because they have to use emails and paper folders and stamps. And, you know, this results in, we call it organizational tax. Yeah. So financial processes slow you down. They slow down your growth. They result in, you know, negative emotions, let's call it like that. And everybody in the organization has to pay it because financial processes involve almost every person in an organization. And so we're trying to do, or how we're trying to solve this problem is we give you a platform that is with an easy interface where you can collect all your financial data, all your invoices, you know, you can automatically capture that data and all the relevant information from the invoices. And then you can use this data and collaborate across this data through custom workflows, yeah, so that you can, you know, handle all of your approvals through Candice, payments, you know, and this results in a way like getting back control over your purchase process, over your costs. And what we're working on right now is that all of this data that we collect, so we're, you know, processing billions of transactions and invoices on our platform, and we want to use that data to generate meaningful insights that help you make better decisions. Yeah, so it's we want to become in a way like a virtual CFO. Yeah, so that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, no, that's pretty. I like what you said around getting back control, especially from a finance perspective. And it's difficult, right? Because as you say, the data is everywhere. Especially, you know, as the whole organization is part of the, I guess, problem and part of the solution. And could you give us a bit of a, maybe a mini case study of the tech in action, how this gives, you know, maybe the, I guess the CFO is going to give the CFO back control and, you know, how he's going to use that data to help guide the financial direction of a company.
I mean, so one thing we realized is that it's very different depending on each company.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think a very good example is, so since Corona, companies in Germany, and I mean across the world, right, had to really fundamentally change how they work. And again, right, Germany, I would say, is in the bottom when it comes to digitization, especially of anything involving accounting and finance. Yeah. So we have many companies, even innovative companies, that still rely on, you know, paper and email spreadsheets when it comes to their financial processes. One thing that I can remember is we had a very big e-commerce shop that basically had to go from, you know, being in the same office to remote in a matter of days. Now, when the first lockdown started here in March. And they had a problem. They also had, you know, a paper-based process. They had, you know, these folders. And this whole process was kept together by the people, you know, running into each other in the office. Yeah. So they could, you know, do all of this communication around, you know, invoices, payments, financial reports on the go. Suddenly they were all in the home office and, you know, the invoices, for example, this was an e-commerce shop. So they had a lot of suppliers that invoiced them for the goods they purchased. And then the finance managers had the challenge that they couldn't give a paper folder anymore to the people who had to approve these invoices, because ultimately they needed an approval to pay them. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they sent them via email. And then, you know, once you send an email, it enters this black box where the recipient might not see the email because you get a lot of emails every day. Mm-hmm. And the sender forgot they sent that email because it's a to-do technically. So then after, you know, 2-3 weeks, the suppliers that hadn't received their payments, they started approaching their account managers and said, hey, you know, I need my money now more than ever. Yeah, we're in a pandemic. And then what the account managers did was then turn to the finance managers and say, hey, you know, like it feels really awkward when somebody you have a business relationship with comes to you and says, hey, please pay me my invoices. So the account managers turned to the finance managers and said, why don't you pay these invoices? What happened? And then the finance managers say, well, I need the approval in order to pay it. Yeah. So there's all of this friction and this conflict. And then, of course, the finance managers then said, okay, great, we need a solution here. But again, the problem is that in Germany, many providers that are in this space of, we call it invoice management or document management even, it takes long to set up, first of all. Yeah, so you need a big implementation project. You have high setup fees, and most of them charge per user. So it becomes very expensive very fast, because when we talk about invoice approvals, there are a lot of people that need to approve an invoice, but they might just need to approve one invoice every quarter.
Yeah.
So this is a big project and you need to fix it fast. So when they found us, then we had an offer where we said, okay, we get you ready for home office in 7 weeks. We offered them, and, you know, which we achieved, because suddenly they had a platform to, you know, solve exactly this particular problem. And the outcome they were trying to achieve and that they did achieve was that the suppliers didn't have to complain about, you know, their invoices not being paid. Yeah, the finance manager had a place where they could look at, you know, what approvals do they still need? What can they already pay? And, you know, because invoices were then paid, they were accounted on time. So they had their financial reports were there on time. So the CEO was happy, or the CFO, because they could report the correct numbers to the board, you know. So that was a very, I guess, extreme example of the tech in action because of Corona. Yeah. But yeah, so.
But that's powerful, right? I mean, you mentioned earlier on, it gives control back. And then that is
exactly
an example. I mean, that gives complete control back, but not only to the company, but also to all the people that are on the periphery, the suppliers and everyone else.
Exactly. I mean, what we say or what we think is that, you know, paying invoices, all that kind of stuff and financial processes, they're not really transactional. They're actually, in the end, it's about relationships. So one thing we realize in sales demos is that many times people in the periphery blame finance teams and finance managers because they are slowing them down, which from their point of view is true. But at the same time, well, finance managers, they have a really tough job and they must not make mistakes. And they don't have access to all of this great software that enables you to work so seamlessly. So it's about relationships. This is one thing that we realized, especially in Corona.
Yeah. And tell me more about that. I mean, the relationship side of things. I mean, that's an interesting take on finances, which a lot of people think as transactional, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
One thing that is really hard for finance people is that financial processes, exactly like you said, it's not a profit center. Everybody loves to spend money and think about, you know, the next marketing campaign. Mm. Yeah. And it's so easy to, from an ROI perspective, to spend money on a new lead generation tool or a CRM, because you can very clearly paint the picture of, hey, but this is the growth, the revenue that I get in return. And finance managers, finance is this thing that people just want to work. Yeah. So that is the, at least from what we hear from our customers and the people we talk to, there's a big problem. So finance is this, in a way, this back pain that you just learn to live with and that never gets the attention it actually deserves because, you know, it slows everybody down a little bit. Yeah. So it's never the most urgent issue on the top of your head, but it's there the whole time. And as you grow, this issue and this pain grows exponentially. And instead of fixing the problem, this results in worse relationships internally inside the company, because even just subconsciously, marketeers or purchasers blame finance people for this friction in the process. And at the same time, bad internal processes result in bad external relationships as well, because then the board tells the CEO, why are these financial reportings not here on time? Yeah, if you have if a bank and suppliers complain, hey, why is my invoice not paid? You know, so there's all of this friction which really impacts the relationships.
How do you cut through the noise and show yourselves as the right tech tool, the right brand to help eliminate that friction?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question, especially when it comes to technology, because we started really talking a lot about our technology and how great it is and how, you know, how we use machine learning to solve, you know, people's problems. And we all had whole sections on the website of, you know, all the cool models that we developed. But turns out nobody really cared except us.
But it's sometimes it's nice to talk about yourself, but I get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, some people do. But what we found out was that because the people we sell to and, you know, the people we want to help and empower are the finance managers. Yeah. Right? So they have real problems every day. And they don't know how to solve them. They want to solve them, but they don't know how to solve them. And they don't get the attention inside the company to, or the urgency to, like, have to solve them, you know, the support so that they can solve them. So what we're trying to do is to really help them and act as a guide, because in finance, you always have the, I mean, this is super sensitive data that you're dealing with. Yeah, it's like it's the heart of the organization, it's their financial data. So data security is a big aspect of it that makes you hesitant to change something. And the second thing is that it's really difficult because, again, financial processes is something that the whole company has to deal with. So you cannot just implement a new tool or process in, you know, a small part of the organization, but it has to be in the whole organization. So because traditionally software is hard to use, it's hard to implement, you know, it seems like this very big project that everybody knows they have to at one point address, but they are scared of addressing this. So what we try to do is we say, look, we know it's hard. If it was easy, you would have already done it. But we're here to help you and we act as a guide and we, you know, we help you on this journey. Part of that is our product, because we believe our product is great and it solves some of your problems, many of your problems, but it's not just about our product. So in our, we offer free consulting sessions instead of sales demos, where we try to understand the process of our, you know, customers, and we try to really help them, which many times is not just our tool, but it's just like we do process consulting, financial process consulting. We have many partners and partner solutions that we love to sell. We change the customer's processes many times. In order to digitize a process, you first need to change it and then digitize it. So that's something we try to do. And at the same time, what we are working on right now is really building up a community of finance managers, because there's not really a platform where, you know, the innovative finance people in Germany, that there are so many of, and they find, you know, great solutions to all the problems they encounter. And they have great opinions on when a certain piece of software is good and what problems it solves, but they don't have a platform to communicate. And so we're trying to build that and, you know, create content together with an expert that solve or that talks about a very specific problem that finance people have, rather than creating general content talking about the future of finance or talking about our technology, which we also do, but just as part of our strategy. So we much rather talk about how do you, you know, fix your Amazon process so that your Amazon invoices are accounted correctly. Yeah, so that's something that works a lot better and resonates a lot better and helps more our target audience than, okay, how does, you know, AI change the future of finance teams?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. So you went from talking about yourselves, which, you know, at a point in time, everyone is allowed to do, to talking about the customer, the finance manager and their problems. And now off the back of that, you've created a community, which you're going to nurture and you're going to create, you're going to work with that community to help each other, right? I mean, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Exactly. And exactly. Ideally, it's finance managers talking about finance manager problems. Yeah.
Yeah. And how does that community look? I mean, what are you guys doing there? Do you sort of meet up or, you know, how does that work?
Yeah. So this is all, I mean, this community is all something that we are, you know, building up right now. And obviously, so we started very early doing meetups. So in the early days of Candice, we did like the Berlin finance and accounting meetup, which was very, you know, successful. It was like 50, 60 people joining it. But then we stopped that. And I cannot tell you why. Yeah, so long ago. So it was, it was probably one of these things where, you know, just because we were looking for immediate kind of like leads that come out of it, which usually doesn't happen. Yeah. So I guess we got impatient in our very early days. And so right now we're trying to build that up again. So one thing that we have is we have a tax advisor network, for example. So we have partner tax advisors that we can refer to people that come to us and say, hey, my tax consultant doesn't understand my business or doesn't support me enough to help me on this journey of digital transformation. So we have a network of, you know, tax advisors that we in a way certified and we know what they are, you know, what they're good at. And we build that connection. We have a partner network of other companies that solve related problems so that we can in a way give the customer a 100% solution to their problem, even though we are just, you know, 40% of that solution. We are, you know, doing right now expert interviews. So we call it like a handbook, where we solve two problems or we show how a pioneer in the industry has solved a specific problem. We record that. We have, you know, interview, how did this person from this company solve this specific problem? And then share that through, you know, our customer base, newsletters, blog. Yeah, so that's where we stand right now. The next thing we want to do is, again, online conferences, webinar series. Yeah, that's the next step.
I love it because it's a second ago, a few minutes ago, we were chatting and we were saying the finance manager is sometimes looked upon as transactional and not a profit center. But you guys focus on the relationship. And now you say you're building a community. And it strikes me that you guys are very focused on building authentic connections, i.e. building that relationship rather than the synthetic side of things, which is transactional. Yeah, very impressive.
Yeah, we realized early on in our sales calls that I would say we're not very good at selling, but we're really good at consulting. So, I mean, finance is complex. And our sales consultants, which is their official title, they need to really understand the customer and they need to know, you know, all the 50 accounting systems out there, all the 200 other tools that people work with. So we really need to train our people, our staff. I mean, I had no idea about, you know, finance and accounting when I started at Candice. So we have accountants in the company. Actually, one of our first product managers, Lars, he was an accountant for, you know, 15 years or 10 years and then joined a Bitcoin startup. So yeah, it's teaching our people about, you know, finance and accounting so that they become experts, so that they can then or are recognized as experts by our customers and can then really help them. And by helping them, we sell our software. That is our strategy. Yeah.
And as you, I mean, we're talking about people now, and as you As your team has started growing and, you know, more people have come in, how has that all worked out? How have you transformed your team as you've started to grow and scale your business?
Yeah. So since we're venture capital funded, so we always have big hiring surges after funding rounds. Yeah, because then, you know, we have the money, we can, you know, we have a new plan, we have more resources, so we need more people. In the very early days, we were, I would say, many people that are rather on the inexperienced side of things, because, I mean, we just didn't have the financial resources available. So I would say when we're talking about the people side, after we raised our last round, the Series B, middle of last year, we really, the next 20 people we hired were all senior people, yeah, in engineering and sales and, you know, everywhere, because we realized we had to, you know, reinvent a lot of wheels because we were essentially doing it for the first time, which is fun and sometimes the right thing to do. But, you know, many times it's problems that somebody has solved before. So there's knowledge out there. And so we need to innovate something where you do not need to innovate. And we realized that we needed more senior people, which, so, you know, we hired, you know, 20, 25 really senior experienced people, and now are changing back to also hiring, you know, more junior people, that because we are confident in our ability to train them and we can use all of their energy. And we train them because we have many people in the company who know their shit.
Yeah.
That is, on a people side, I would say the most significant thing that changed. When it comes to the structure of the company, because so in terms of headcount, you have no problems when you are like 15 people or 20 people. Yeah, it's a communication. You don't have any structure. You just have like tasks that need to get done. And you naturally do things right by just not making anything explicit. So you have high collaboration, high autonomy and everything. And then you grow, which completely happened to us after Series A. You grow, you become more people, and suddenly all of these things you never realized were a problem are a huge problem. And so we had, after Series A, I would say we had like a complete standstill in the organization for at least 2 months, because there were so many people, so many new people, and we didn't have a structure to make them successful. We didn't even have a structure to hire the right people for us. Yeah, so we hired people without a proper process. This was one of the key things we learned. Yeah, so when talking about structure, what we then, when we raised the Series B, changed was the first person we hired was a recruiter. Yeah, before doing anything else, and that recruiter, again, somebody who has done this successfully before, built the process through which we then hired, you know, 10 engineers or so. This was so much better and resulted in, you know, these 10 engineers actually all being successful here. So, you know, helping us and, you know, us being able to onboard them. And the second thing, so this is in terms of, you know, like people and hiring. The second thing when it comes to how the company works and operates, so the structure and how you build teams, we were, I guess, at the start, again, cross-functional by definition, because we didn't have any functions and the same person was doing marketing and sales calls and hiring at the same time. And then, you know, the easiest thing to do is you just, you know, at one point you have a person for marketing, then you have a team for marketing, then you have a big team for marketing. So you just like organically build out a functional organization where you have a marketing team, a sales team, a success team, engineering, a front-end team, a back-end team. And that happened to us as well, which also resulted in, you know, a lot of, you know, marketing and sales then just naturally fall into a fight. Yeah. So sales says, where are my leads? I don't have enough leads. Yeah. Marketing says, I give you all the leads, but you're not converting them. You know, the information gets lost. So you build up silos. So this was, you know, we really took a lot of time thinking about, okay, how can we build teams that are cross-functional, meaning they can own as much as possible of the value generation process. And so basically, how do we slice the pie? So, and that has really worked for us when it came to the phase of, so I would say we did a better job scaling from 60 to 100 people than we did scaling from 30 to 60 people, even though I would say the latter is harder because we paid a lot of attention into how do we build the teams instead of just naturally falling into this functional way of building your company.
And you raised some interesting points and building teams and making certain they work cross-functionally. But as these folks started coming in, how did you make certain they, you know, were integrated into the business and what they needed to do and could sort of operate by themselves, be successful? I mean, you alluded to it early on. It'd be really interesting to hear how you guys went about that.
Yeah. So I had nothing to do with that. So this one, you know.
Bad question, Richard.
But I know what we did and what worked out. So the first thing, it starts in hiring. So in the hiring process, we include, like, everybody in this company that wants to be included in hiring is included in hiring. So everybody goes at least three-step process, most of the times four or five steps. That doesn't mean our process takes a lot of time in terms of beginning to end. It's actually quite fast, but it has several steps. So somebody that starts here already knows, you know, their team, at least they have met them in a Zoom call. They know they had, you know, deep conversations with a couple of people from the team. So they don't, you know, they don't start not knowing anybody. The second thing is we have an onboarding, pretty by now, I would say, good onboarding program where everybody goes through the first month, which includes some standardized sessions. So culture session, history of the company session, you know, that includes joining a sales demo, a support call, you know, joining a sprint retrospective, that everybody goes through that so that everybody has this general knowledge of the company, knows at least one person from other teams, you know, has spoken to at least one customer, has spoken to at least one, you know, person who is thinking about buying the software. And then in addition to that, we have a buddy system where everybody who joins has a buddy that is, that cannot be their manager, but many times is a person from the team or so. So they have like regular check-ins twice, three times a week where, you know, the buddy's there to just answer any questions they might have. And since this is an evolving process, we have just regular feedback sessions. So everybody who goes through this process has a 30-day interview, 60-day, 90-day that is done by the people ops team, where, you know, they're basically being asked to improve this person, this process for the next person. And then, you know, after you have the first 20, 30 people through that process with these free check-ins, 30 day, 60 day, 90 day, you have a pretty solid process in place, I would say.
Interesting way of building up. Also, I guess the philosophy in the business as well, because you're getting the new guys to help, you know, continuously adapt and change a process that they've been through.
Yeah, definitely.
And as we've alluded to people and you've chatted through some processes and what have you, but, you know, as you went from the 20 to the, or the 30 to the 60, and then the 60 to the 100 people onboarded, what are the critical maybe systems that you guys were building and putting in place from an overall business perspective? So the finance system, maybe the onboarding system that you just mentioned. How did you guys prioritize the build out of internal systems?
So we use a lot of software. I think we have like 150 subscriptions to software. I would say the most critical from my perspective was two systems. First one, Looker. Second one, Salesforce. So Looker is you know, like a self-service BI platform that enabled us to really become more data mature. So really, as the organization grows, you don't need to hire BI like a manager. Yeah, we hired the first BI manager when we were at like 20 people. He's still here and he's the only one. Yeah. So him and Luca are running our data operations. And I would say, or at least that's what people that join this company say, is that, you know, we're doing a pretty good job when it comes to using data when making decisions. So Luca, in my mind, I'm a huge fan, has really democratized data across the organization, which then leads to more people actually using data because, you know, they have, it's there. Yeah. That they can grab it. They can, you know, it takes 2 minutes to answer a complicated question in a meeting. So you have the data there, you can, and that enables people to make better decisions, because if we want to build autonomous teams, they have to make their own decisions and they have to be in a position to make good decisions. And I guess data is something that helps. So Luca, definitely, it's expensive, but as soon as you can afford it, I think it's definitely worth it, especially when you're scaling, you know, your company also in terms of headcount.
It's interesting you mentioned data. And then Luca is, you know, when you're talking around data here, it's data internally for Candace, so you guys can make the right call. You have data at your fingertips to make the right calls. You don't have to scurry around, talk to 101 people to figure out the actual truth. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we have data science people in the company as well, right? And so we do a lot of advanced analysis and also our BI manager, he does a lot of, you know, builds models and that kind of stuff. But I would say 95% of the time that we need data, it's very, very basic questions. Now, how many demos did we get last month from Facebook and how many of them, you know, became a customer? Like, those are most of the data questions. And, you know, when you're in a meeting, it's, even though those are simple questions, it's really important that you have access to that data, right? Yeah. And once you have it, this might not be the ultimate thing that you actually, so you realize, okay, I don't know, out of the people from last month, I now have two customers, but, you know, then the next question might be, and so what about the ones that are still in the sales process? Where are they in the sales process? Yeah. And so it's a, data, again, transactional, yeah, is not, I have a question and I submit a request to BI and they give me the answer, but it's rather like a, okay, this sounds weird, but like a conversation, yeah? So once you get the answer, that leads to the next question, And Luca enables you to do that. Traditional systems and the traditional process between kind of like, you know, business teams and business intelligence doesn't, because there's always this friction in there.
Yeah. It's such a great point. I mean, I spoke to another guest a few weeks ago, and he was also mentioning exactly the same thing. They're using a different system, but they put data at the center of their in-house build-out to make certain that, exactly to your point, they have the data at their fingertips to make the tough calls if they need to make the tough calls, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And listen, I mean, as we get towards the end of the show, I'd like to, you know, ask you, as you look forward to, you know, 2021, 2022 and beyond, what questions are you guys sort of asking yourselves right now? And what factors, either technology, industry or economic factors, are you considering as you go forward on that growth trajectory?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing we had to ask was what will happen after Corona in terms of where are the people, where will they work from? Yeah. Do we now hire globally? Do we hire in Germany everywhere, or do we keep hiring locally? So we answered that question now. So we actually rented a new office and said that there will still be the key place to work will be the office, even though people will work from everywhere, but not all the time. So that's, I guess, one thing that we had to answer. When we look into the future in terms of growth, I mean, for us, it's for our product, the question is really, well, what are the next big problems to solve, right? Because so we are this platform for collaboration, and there's just so much to still do. So the question is really, well, what do we do next? What's the next big, you know, opportunity? And is the technology already in a place to solve that problem? Yeah. So there are still a lot of things that you just cannot solve to the extent that you would really meaningfully make a, you know, improve the life of the finance person. So that's on an innovation side of things, on the product side of things, that's something that we are thinking about. And the third thing is, I guess, also in terms of, you know, we want to raise another funding round. Yeah, we're a VC-backed company. We need to grow at a pace that supports or that is on a VC pace, basically. So the question is always, okay, what is the thing that limits growth right now? Well, what is the limiting factor so that we are not, you know, if we had 10 times the marketing budget tomorrow, we wouldn't be able to handle that growth. Why? Yeah, well, what is the thing that is blocking us right now? And then I guess, how can we solve that? That is the next thing. So it's really about, I mean, for in our case, we don't want to have a self-sign-up product because we realize that this consulting interaction with the finance person, on the other hand, is meaningful and is something that really generates value for us because we really get to know the experiences of our customers and for the customer, because in this session, we're already able to help them. But, you know, when somebody, we're a business, we need to, you know, have an acquisition process that makes sense. So for us, the question is, how can we, because we see that all, especially bigger companies, so, you know, and companies between 100 to 500 employees really have problems that we think we can solve, but we cannot, you know, we need to integrate into more systems that they're using. You know, we need to maybe change certain kind of functionality. And so this is an area we want to grow in. So our question is, how can we grow up market? Now, how can we grow into these bigger businesses so that we can also keep our, let's call it manual sales approach, because we want to keep that while, you know, being a business that makes sense.
A very interesting insights there, and obviously quite poignant as you move forward along your journey. But, you know, as we finish up here, I mean, I always like to ask my guests what book or what podcast are they listening to right now that they think our listeners would like to maybe either read or listen to. So I'll ask you the same thing, Lena. I mean, what are you doing right now to build that knowledge?
So my favorite podcast is Pivot by Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway. They talk about all things big tech, so tech strategy, markets, etc. So I think it's very entertaining, very insightful. Maybe not that applicable to, you know, what you're doing day to day, but I think it's interesting to learn about how Amazon or Apple think about strategy. There's always some inspiration in there. Books I'm reading, they are much more practical. So we talked about, I guess, structuring organizations. So right now I'm reading, or I just finished reading Six Simple Rules, How to Manage Complexity Without Getting Complicated, which is a very interesting book that really talks about, well, how do you build teams? How do you structure your organization so that you really, you manage all of this complexity? And you're growing more people, everything gets more complex without standing in your own way and introducing, you know, complicatedness. So more processes, more rules, more hierarchy. So, yeah, and I think that's a great book for anybody who is, I guess, involved in building organizations.
Now, awesome. Sounds like a couple of good recommendations. And, you know, if anyone wanted to get in touch with you or sort of the guys at Candace, how can they do that?
Sure. Like, I mean, just go to candace.io. We're on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. And yeah, we have a live chat on the website. You can just say, hey, how awesome. Are you? You know, we'll respond.
Awesome. Listen, it's been a really great chat today. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And we dive deep into some of the stuff that, you know, you guys have done really, really well. So I really enjoyed the chat today and looking forward to, you know, watching you guys in the future and that success that's definitely going to come. So, you know, awesome chat today, mate.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.